Chris Lewerton here, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. My guest today, I welcome the beekeeper, Keith Beck. Welcome, Keith.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Yes. Now, that movie, The Beekeeper, with Jason Statham, did you go see that movie?
I'm sorry, this beekeeper's pretty busy. I don't have time for movies.
Oh, my. That was a good one. That was a good one.
I'll have to put that on my schedule.
Now, Keith, you've been raising bees for a while.
10 years. Ten years.
10 years.
Yes.
Okay. Now, before we get into honeybees, so where'd you come from? Where are you from, son?
Yeah, well, I grew up in South Calhoun. I went to Brussels High School and grew up and did everything that Calhoun boys do over in South Calhoun.
Yeah. You and Craig?
Yep, Craig.
Craig Ballman.
Craig Ballman,
he's a South Calhouner.
He was 3 years older than me, so he was a senior when I was a freshman. But okay. I grew up with his sister, Kelly, and Mark. And, we all have a pretty tight network over there.
Yeah, it is. And so you grew up there and went on to college.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I started my college career at Lewis and Clark. Had a really valued education there. And once I got my associate's degree, I transferred up to the University of Illinois and earned my degree in mechanical engineering.
Ah, yes. Yeah, another engineer.
Yes.
Kind of like those engineers.
Well, enough. I won't expand on that.
Well, I got a son that's an engineer.
Okay. Well, electrical
engineer.
So. You understand how we're wired.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I understand how you're wired, which is nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So you're married.
Yes, sir.
Got some children.
Yep, two children.
Tell us about your family.
Yeah, well, I'm married to Becky Underwood. Larry Underwood is her dad, and Sue Underwood is her mom.
Okay.
Both teachers over in the Brussels School District. So I grew up with Becky's mom being my teacher in kindergarten and third and fourth grade, and then her dad was my teacher all through high school.
I see.
So, we kind of met over there and
dated
in 1984. So, we got through college and got some jobs. And
now, did you guys go to the same schools together? Or
Obviously, we went to Brussels.
I know
together,
that, but I mean
but,
college.
She went on to Western Illinois University and got her degree there. So, and I was at the University of Illinois. So, we had a little bit of a. I made a lot of trips back and forth from U of I to Western.
I bet you did.
So, but that was all good.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Then you both got out of school, and then you were a mechanical engineer. So,
yep.
Where did you go from there?
Yeah, I hired in right out of college at Olin Corporation down here in East Alton, working for Winchester Division. I've been with them from day one. Had multiple roles of increasing importance or just hired in as a line supervisor in manufacturing. Did new product development. Worked in supply chain and purchasing, and now I'm currently their packaging engineer. So
it's all about bullets?
Yep. Everything we do is putting quality product in our customers' hands.
I see.
Yep.
Now you have some children, so tell
us
about them.
Yep, have two children.
You got grandchildren too?
Oh, no. Well, no? I've not yet.
Not yet.
I have a 21-year-old, Matthew. He's a volunteer firefighter down in Cottage Hills and working in that area. And then my youngest son, Samuel, 13, he's playing baseball and working on his Eagle Scout and working for some folks around town mowing grass. So doing what kids do.
That's right.
Yeah.
So no grandkids yet, but I'm sure there's going to be some coming down the line, you know. Especially being from Brussels, you know, it's kind of genetic. A lot of kids, a lot of family, big families down there.
Yep, looking forward to when those days come.
Now, I've been eating your honey for a while now. It's good stuff.
Well, see, I thought your wife was the consumer, but she was taking good care of you, and I appreciate that.
Yes,
thank you.
I like it in my coffee.
Yes, sir.
You know, yep. I used to do sweetener stuff, but I know that's no good for you, you know, so I switched over and, you know, just a little bit of honey in there just takes the edge off, and I really enjoy it.
So. I do too. I recently got off coffee because I'm trying to cut back on the caffeine, but currently this morning I put it in my tea every morning.
Okay. Yeah. And, of course, I like honey on toast. A little honey on toast is excellent, or biscuits, you know. How about you? You got any other?
Yeah, we use honey we were just chatting earlier. Before I became a beekeeper, we'd use about 2 quarts of honey a year. I'd buy it from my best friend, Joe Sibley, who was a beekeeper since he was a young pup. Him and I are the same age. And now that I'm a beekeeper, we consume about 7 gallons of honey a year because I'm a beekeeper and it's free and there's buckets of honey everywhere. So
you brought some honey.
Yep.
In today.
Yes.
Now, what size container is that?
That's a pint jar.
A pint jar.
People in this an agrarian community that we all live in are familiar with quarts and pints because that's kind of back from the days when folks did canning. So I look at a package presentation that's familiar with the consumers, and that's a nice presentation.
Yeah. And so how many gallons do you say you're going through?
Seven gallons of honey, a 5 gallon bucket and 2 more gallons of honey.
Okay. Wow.
That's serious.
That's some serious honey. I wonder how much I'm going through.
Not enough.
Oh, yes. Now, how in the heck did you, you're a mechanical engineer, how in the heck did you get into being a beekeeper?
That's a great question. I'll tell you, I've been beekeeping for 10 years, and this was kind of on the eve of losing my best friend. Him and I were bird hunting buddies, deer hunting buddies. We farmed together. I met him at Olin, working in the industry. He was nearing moving on to his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And there was I saw a void in my life, and, there was a swarm of bees that showed up in my front yard. My oldest son, Matthew, came running in the house hysterical, said, "Hey, there's a bunch of bees in the yard." And I said, so I called my friend, Joe Sibley, the beekeeper I mentioned earlier. And I said, "What do you do with these bees?" And he said, "Well, you wait a little bit and they'll fly off. You know, you don't have to worry about it." And I said, "What's my other option?" He said, "Well, you can become a beekeeper." And I said, "Well, that's the option I want to do." And lo and behold, I had no clue what I was getting into, never thought about keeping bees in my life prior to that. I started becoming a beekeeper, and it was, I think it was a godsend because it filled a void in my life where I was going to lose my best friend.
Right.
And what a learning curve it was. I read every journal, every book I could find. I'm not big on YouTube videos. It's kind of not my MO. Uh-huh. I really like to read and learn by reading information and technical journals. Mm-hmm. But it all boots on the ground is by far the best way to learn. So doing beekeeping was what I did after that.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Keith Beck in here, a beekeeper, local beekeeper, and he's explaining some of the what goes into being a beekeeper and how he got into being beekeeping. So how did you catch those bees? What'd you do?
Well,
what do you do? You got a beehive?
Yes. Yeah. Well, not being a beekeeper, I had zero beekeeping equipment, and there's a big ball of bees hanging in my front yard. I backed my truck up under the tree.
What do you mean a ball of bees? Were they round?
Yeah. Well, when bees naturally propagate the species, the parent colony builds up and they're crowded. And it's nature's way of saying, hey, we need to make more beehives. They take half of that colony and it splits.
Oh.
And they fly off to my tree in my front yard.
They're looking for a spot.
Looking for a new home.
What are they looking for exactly?
That's a great question.
I mean, are they making this round beehive type thing, or are they doing something different?
Well, as they're sitting in my front yard, and they're just a big ball of bees, they're all surrounding the queen bee, keeping her safe.
Okay.
And while that hive is, or that colony is sitting there on that tree, they have scouts that go out and look for hollow trees.
Okay, that's what they're looking
Hopefully
for.
Hopefully not somebody's house that has a hollow wall.
Yeah.
Which can happen from time to time. But normally they're looking for a hollow tree that has about 1.5 to 2 cubic feet of space. They look at how much, they actually measure the space inside of this cavity where they want to move. And once the scouts determine they've got a great place to move, they communicate within that whole big ball of bees. You're looking at 20, 30, 40,000 bees.
Wow.
And they are able to communicate throughout that cluster of bees, and then they take off flying. And they'll fly to that new home and establish themselves as a colony.
So now, what'd you do? That's
well,
what I want to know.
Yeah, well, I intervene. I jump in, but as Joe said, you can let them fly off to their new home, or I can provide a home for them.
Yeah.
So I went and found a wood box in my shop, trimmed the limb off the tree, and shook them into that box, and lo and behold.
You shook them into the box?
Yeah, I mean, I bust them off. I just shook the whole limb.
Yeah.
And 30,000 bees fall into a box.
I'll be darned.
And it's an amazing sight to see. Once that queen got into that box and they decided that kind of met their requirements for their new colony, they went ahead and stayed in that box.
Yeah.
Now, not being a beekeeper, I had no bee equipment. Remember,
right.
I don't have a beehive. So I got online that night, ordered some bee boxes and bee equipment, showed up. A couple days later, Joe came down from his home up in Normal, Bloomington Normal, and showed me how to put him in a beehive. And at that point, I was on my way.
Did you have to get some gear to wear to
yep.
do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, as I said, I had no equipment. So Joe sent me a whole laundry list of bill of materials. You need all this equipment. So I started spending money. And it's interesting, and we talk about I mentor many new beekeepers
then. You do now? Okay.
I do. I usually do one beekeeper a year.
Really?
And get them into beekeeping. And my first comment to them is, are you willing to spend $1,500 to $2,000? And that's about what it costs to become a beekeeper.
Before we get into the mechanics of how a beehive works, I'd like for you to explain the importance of bees as far as environment goes. You know, share that with the listeners.
Sure. Honeybees in North America, does the lion's share of pollinating of all commercial crops in the country. So for an example, in February, the almonds in Southern California need to be pollinated. If they are not pollinated, they won't have a crop. So they're, statistically speaking, there's about 3 million beehives in the country, in the United States. And in February, 2 million of those 3 million beehives go to Southern California to pollinate almonds.
Okay. Explain the pollination process that a bee does
yes.
when they pollinate.
Yeah, so with honeybees, the pollination process is as they're in the bloom receiving the nectar,
mm-hmm.
they also pick up pollen. There's two food products that honeybees survive on, nectar and pollen. Nectar is their carbohydrates, and pollen is their protein.
Okay.
But then they go from bloom to bloom to bloom to bloom, and the process of pollination is taking that pollen from all these different blooms,
uh-huh.
and that's how pollination works.
Okay.
Yes.
So without that process, well, is there any other, like say bees are eliminated, gone.
Well,
what do we do then?
Well, bees are, as I said, they do the lion's share of pollination. They are the industrial workers in the world for pollination. You have other things like hummingbirds and flies and bumblebees and mason bees, but honeybees are the industrial workers. If we lost our pollinators, this is research I've done, if pollinators ceased to be in existence, we would lose 1/3 of the food on our plate.
Are you talking about just the honeybees? If we lost the honeybees?
Pollinators.
Okay.
Now, this is bigger, big picture.
Okay.
But keep in mind, honeybees do the lion's share of the work.
Right.
So if honeybees didn't exist, a lion's share of the food on our plate would not be there today.
Is there a lot of people? I mean, do we need you guys, like beekeepers, taking care of these bees, or can they on their own would they be able to survive and pollinate?
That's a great question. I think without beekeepers, honeybees would survive on their own. Uh-huh. But as beekeepers, we are able to provide honeybees an environment, a home, a beehive that is managed. We can make sure that, and we put them in environments where they can survive and thrive. So me as a beekeeper, this kind of falls back into my youth growing up on the farm, being a beekeeper instead of growing chickens and ducks and cows and hogs, growing hay and mm-hmm. corn like I did on the farm. I'm a farmer of bees at this point in my life. So I manage them. I make sure they stay healthy. I put them in environments where they can get fresh water, fresh sources of nectar and pollen, and that allows them to be more productive.
You know, the thing about bees, okay, when a normal person, or not a normal person, but an uneducated person comes around a bunch of bees, they get scared, right?
Yes.
Because if you get stung by a bunch of, it could kill you, right?
It depends. I mean, if there are people that are deathly allergic to honeybees, it's very seldom that's the case where they would have to go to the hospital. But most people have a minor reaction where you feel the sting and you'll have some swelling. Your hand might puff up a little bit, but that's not an issue of losing your life. Now, there are people that can have those situations, and they typically know it. They have an EpiPen in their possession to combat the venom of a bee sting.
Now, of course, pollination is vital for us, for our crops and for
Absolutely.
Us. And there must be a lot of bees out there. You know, I mean, there must be a lot of beekeepers, and there must be a lot naturally around it to get it done.
Yeah, I started beekeeping. My best friend down the street is also beekeeper, Justin Hill.
Yeah.
And we got into beekeeping within 5 days of each other.
I'll be
and
gone.
We're neighbors. So we kind of grew up together in as we understood the mechanics of beehives, how to be a good beekeeper, where to put your bees. And then obviously if you become a good beekeeper, you get a lot of honey. So how you get that product out to the people in the community to enjoy, other than us using 7 gallons of honey.
Yeah, let's talk about your honey. I see you got a couple different kinds here, okay? So how do you end up with different flavors of honey from the same bees?
Well, it's interesting. That's a good question, a very good question. So I have two colors of honey. I have a dark honey here, and that was from late last summer, and that comes off of wildflowers. There's a farm between here and Otterville, 72 acres of pollinator CRP ground, and there's nothing but wildflowers. I got pictures on my phone, and all you see is yellows and purples and whites all throughout this property, and that's wildflower honey. This other jar of honey, which is a lighter, much lighter color, that's the Springs honey, which is mostly the Dutch white clover that you see in people's yards and honey locust trees that bloom in middle of May. So as it seems like as the season goes on, the honeys get darker, and even every beehive, as I check them, I taste the honey. You can taste a little bit different bouquet in every beehive, even though they're sitting side by side, because they may forage in different areas.
Okay. I've heard, read, I can't remember exactly where, as we develop our cities and our towns and our neighborhoods and everything, we're cutting out a lot of those plants that they don't allow the bees to pollinate. You know, what is your suggestion naturally that we could do that you could tell the listeners, like, well, this would really help out the bees if you would do this?
Well, I did some presentations on that, and I hate to say it, but everybody at living that likes to have their well-manicured yard with nothing but bluegrass or 31 fescue that has nothing but blades of grass is not really good for beekeeping.
What's good for beekeeping?
If you let your
grass grow up tall?
Well, not necessarily. It's let the dandelions grow. Dandelions are a phenomenal food source for honeybees.
Okay.
And if the blooms are edible, I have dandelion tea that I drink quite often.
I thought it was a weed.
Well, if you research that, that's the bad name that it's gotten.
Okay.
But the dandelion has many, many beneficial things for us as humans as in consumption. So let the dandelions grow. The second thing is plant Dutch clover, the white clover that you see growing. I live up here on the fairgrounds, and there's 40 acres of Dutch clover growing up there. It's a great food source for the honeybees.
Ah.
Same way out here at the city park. By Dolan Park, I have beehives out there by the city park. And if you look across that park in the spring, it's just nothing but a carpet of white clover, which is just a phenomenal food source. So I would say let the dandelions grow and put clover in your yard. And a clover in itself is a legume. It isolates nitrogen out of the atmosphere and puts that into your soil, which is also good for the ground.
Now, how can I recognize this clover? Because I'm not...
I think
what's it look like?
I think it's called like Ladino clover, maybe. Maybe
yeah.
A lot of the deer hunters use that in their food plots, but Dutch clover and or Ladino clover, it's white clover.
It's white. Okay.
Yeah, it's got a little white bloom on it.
Okay. Well, let's, you know what? We have run out of time. We are going to have to come back
and
talk a little bit more about
honeybees. I told you this would go longer than
yeah,
you expected.
Yeah. So we covered a lot of territory.
Yes, sir.
Any last words of wisdom before we finish this?
Well, I would say support your local beekeepers. As you know, we're working hard out there to keep bees healthy and put them in areas that they can really benefit flowers and pollination.
Buy local.
Buy local. Yes,
local honey, because you're helping the whole environment. Everybody in our area.
The local honeys have a fair amount of pollen in it, which if you might have some allergies, it's been deemed that if you get pollen from your local plant source, it may help your allergies
out.
Yeah.
I think I read that.
That's a benefit from local
to eat local
right. honey.
Yeah. Now, if somebody wants to buy some honey from you, how do they do that?
That's a great question. I live up on West Fairgrounds. We've got a sign in the yard. I got honey stocked on the side porch. Just swing by and pick up whatever size you want, or you can reach me on my cell phone, 618-402-8567. Send me a text, and I'd be happy to sync up with you.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Keith, for coming in today.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, same here.